with men. I've always been in love.
Natalie Krasowska one time decided she was in love with the first violinist. And I was the best man at the wedding.
And Mr. Denham didn't give me one day for my honeymoon. I have to perform the same day.
It had to be in the Russian church. It had to be in the Russian way with the crowns above their heads and the candles, and she had her white veil.
Suddenly the bed catches fire.
And she still was standing there, totally oblivious that, you know, the flames were pouring around her head.
It was something else, and of course then the Russians say, disaster. Of course, 6 weeks later, she's divorced.
Raven Wilkinson, the first African-American dancer in any major ballet company, tells a more painful story.
We went that first fall and toured all the rest of the United States, came back to the South, nothing happened, and the next year, and nothing happened. And then suddenly, it started. I remember Montgomery. We came into town on the bus, and the Klan was having a rally. They were all out in the hoods and the gowns and everything. And these two men came down the aisle of the theater and yelled up on the stage, "Hey, where's the nigger?" We didn't say anything. So they came up on the stage. They went to one group and they said, "Where's the nigger?" And nobody batted an eye. And they came to the next group and nobody batted an eye. Then they came to the group I was in and nobody batted an eye. So they had to go away. And I swear their necks were red.
The daily grind and the privations of one-night stands were exhausting. But here's grown-up baby ballerina Irina Baranova summing it all up.
It was difficult, but we loved what we were doing. All right, we would get tired, but it never occurred to us to say, "Oh, a union, I'm going to call the union, you can't do that to us." No. It was fun, it was great, and sometimes you even got paid. What more do you want?
The filmmakers have unearthed hours of rare archival footage, some of it dating back to wind-up 16mm cameras in the 1930s, most of it never before seen in public. These extraordinary clips, some of them from lost ballets, and all of them too brief if you ask me, prove what amazing artists these dancers were and what dazzling things they were asked to do. Five of them have died since their interviews in 2000, and the film is dedicated to their memory. It's a loving and fitting tribute.
Lloyd Schwartz is classical music editor of the Boston Phoenix and teaches English at the University of Massachusetts, Boston. He reviewed the new documentary, Ballet Russe. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our senior producer is Roberta Shurrock. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Sue Spolin directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for NPR comes from Bantam Books, publisher of Social Intelligence, The New Science of Human Relationships by Daniel Goleman, author of Emotional Intelligence. From the Horace W. Goldsmith Foundation, supporting the new Museum of Modern Art in Midtown Manhattan. Information at moma.org. And from Rosalind Croman Swig, thanking the donors to the NPR Foundation and councils for their support of NPR programming. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, Michael Weisskopf tells us about losing his hand while on assignment in Iraq for Time magazine. He had tossed a live grenade out of the Humvee he was traveling in. His new book is called Blood Brothers. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Hello, this is KZYX, 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, and 88.1 FM Fort Bragg, K201 HR. This is Mendocino County Public Broadcasting, listener-supported community radio. We're coming up on 1 o'clock, and we hope you stay tuned for the Farm and Garden Show. Linda and Sarah will be interviewing and talking with Gloria and Stephen Decatur of Live Power Community Farm about local farm economy and the future of creating kind of a sustainable economic model for farming in the area and hopefully for the world. So hopefully you will stay tuned for that, and we'll be right up in a minute.
A tender ballad. Well, there ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Oven in the morning, out in the garden, get you a rifle. Hey, don't get a heart. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging. Every time I go out and dig me a bit. Homegrown tomatoes, what'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
The Farm and Garden Show is brought to you in part by our members and the preceding portion, here we go. The preceding portion of Fresh Air has been brought to you by Myers Apothecary Shop in Ukiah at 238 Hospital Drive. The Farm and Garden Show is brought to you in part by our members and Dirt Cheap Landscape and Garden Supply, a full line of bulk and bagged soil amendments, tools, and indoor garden supplies. Delivery service available with their biofuel-powered trucks. Information at 964-4211. And welcome to the Farm and Garden Show. My name is Linda McElwee and
Sarah McCammon.
All right. And we come to you the first Monday of every month. And we're going to start some things off here with a few announcements. Coming up this Friday, October 6th, is the Mendocino College Agricultural Department and Horticultural Club, their fall plant sale. That's from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. this Friday at the College Greenhouse at 1000 Hensley Creek Road in Ukiah. And you can get perennials, California natives, rare and unusual plants, large selection of trees and shrubs, and heirloom apple trees. And for more information, you can call 468-3148 or www.mendocino.edu. Also happening on this weekend is the Butler Cherry Ranch Project and United Peace Relief. It's an event called A Taste of Autumn. This is Sunday, October 8th, from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. at the Fry Ranch. That's 14,000 Tom Kai Road in Redwood Valley. You can enjoy music by the Chinchillas, the Fries, and Redbud. There'll be wine tasting, hors d'oeuvres, silent auction, apple juice making, lavender sachet making. Tickets are available at the Mendocino Book Company, Ukiah, and in Ukiah. That's the Mendocino Book Company in Ukiah, and Leaves of Grass in Willits. More information, you can call 463-2736. That's should be a real nice event happening out there at the Butler Cherry Ranch. Also happening this Sunday, October 8th, is a local foods potluck and a video happening at the Philo Grange. That starts at 6 p.m. and the video is at 7 p.m. and this is the film is going to be My Father's Garden. It's the story of two farmers dedicated to producing good food, and one was the father of the filmmaker, and his story is told through her memories of growing up in the orange groves of Florida and seen in the haunted and fading images of old home movies from the family. Herbert Smith was a hero of his age, dedicated, innovative, a champion of the new miracle sprays of the 50s. The other farmer is Fred Kirschenman of North Dakota, is a hero for our age. Faced with a shattered farm economy and the devastating environmental effects of chemical farming, Fred steered his family farm through the transition to organic farming. 40 years later, the Kirschenman farm is a thriving testament to ingenuity, hard work, and reverent understanding of nature. That's going to be brought to you by the Anderson Valley Food Shed Group and the Anderson Valley Grange. It's part of the October Come On Home to Eat Month.
Right, and we have a few other events to announce around that. There's a lot of things to celebrate local food and farming in the area. this month. So if you are interested in finding out more of those, you can look for flyers around or check the website. Cell's website will have an updated list of all the events happening at coastlocalized.org. Some other things you might want to know about for the next week and a half are Thursday, October 5th, our Daily Bread video at the Willits in Willits at the Little Lake Health Center at 7 p.m. That's sponsored by Well. And then Monday, October 9th, the Elder Talk that the Well's putting on, where they bring in elders from the area to talk about agriculture and livelihood. And that also will be at the that will be in Willits at the Little Lake Grange at 6:30 p.m. And then on Saturday, October 14th, there will be the South Coast Grange and Cell are sponsoring a harvest potluck featuring local food, and that will be at the Manchester Grange.
And next Thursday, October 12th, there'll be the hotel, Boonville Hotel will be hosting a dinner, a prefix dinner, and you can call for more information at 895-2210.
Great, and so we've started Come On Home to Eat. Everyone, I hope, out there is thinking about where their food is coming from and looking for locally grown food and really getting creative and really exploring what is in our local food shed. So I hope people are enjoying that.
And if you can make it to one of these local food potlucks happening around the county, it's a great way to connect and celebrate with your community and talk about what you're finding out about what it's like to try and eat locally, meet all your needs. It's there are definitely some challenges, but we also have so it's pretty easy for us in many ways.
Yeah. I want to make sure people know that also I just remembered that Gulp out in Ukiah is going to be having a potluck. I think it's the next Saturday after the farmer's market at the Alex Thomas Plaza. I just heard about that. So that's another one. So I think every area is having some local food potluck in the next bit of time. So,
all right. Well, we are very excited about our guests today. We're Stephen and Gloria Decatur of the Live Power Community Farm are with us. And they're going to be talking about their experiences of farming here locally in the community and how we can sustain our local farms and what it takes to sustain a local farm and how we can create a sustainable, viable local food economy here. Stephen and Gloria, are you with us?
I'm here.
Hello.
Oh, great.
This is Steve.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have you.
It's great to hear all the things that are happening locally to celebrate local eating. We're excited about that.
Great. Yeah, good. I know. It's probably something you do. We talked about it just briefly, but most of the year, except the thin months, it gets a little harder. February, March area, when the transition.
Right, exactly.
So would you like to, let's begin, if you could give us a little history about the Live Power Community Farm and what you've been going through to get you like the past 35 years to the present day, what you've developed on your farm there.
We're working with a 40-acre farm organism here that we've been developing for, we've been here 32 years, and we've gone through various stages, originally more growing for ourselves, more as a subsistence farm, and then in the late 70s, we were part of a farmer's market here in Covelo, the major grower in that market, and then in 1988, we initiated a community-based farm with originally 15 families, originally in the Bay Area, and then that grew each year afterwards. It doubled until presently, and for the past 10 years, we're serving about 150 or 60 households.
Wow.
About 100 households in the Bay Area, and probably 50 or so in Mendocino County between Covelo, Willits, and Ukiah,
mm-hmm.
and some Redwood Valley families.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow, that's so impressive.
So Mendocino County gets the Tuesday harvest, and Bay Area gets the Friday harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working with the farm as they say, it's a 40-acre land base, but we're using about 4 acres of that for vegetable growing. And then the rest of the acreage, we've got about 2 acres in grains for feeding livestock. It's a diverse farm. We have a small cow herd of 6 herd cows and then the calves, and we have about 10 ewes, and so we get 12, 14, 15 lambs a year. And we use draft horses for soil tillage, and so even though we have 4 acres in producing food for people, we're actually using the rest of the land to grow both the fertility inputs for the farm in terms of compost and manure and plant material that mainly is focused on the 4 acres that are in vegetable production. And then the other land, as I say, 2 acres in grain approximately each year, and the rest in hay and pasture that we're using to feed that animal complement so that we have that manure and can build the compost necessary for the 4 acres of vegetable growing. So we're trying to...
Uh-oh. Seems like we're having some static in the lines. We can hear you. It's coming and going. Can you hear the static?
No.
I can hear just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's coming up rather strong in our output here. So let's see. We'll just see how it goes, but not sure where it's coming from at this point.
Uh-huh.
Sorry to interrupt you.
Okay. So the one of our objects is to be able to produce food from a solar energy base, and so we're and that includes, you know, making as small a footprint as we can in terms of our compost, and most a lot of organic farming today is that compost is made by sometimes a sort of industrial scale composting operations, and the energy input there is fairly high, and also the pollution input that comes from fossil energy. So we're trying to reduce that footprint as much as we can by creating those needs out of the farm itself. And of course, it's also really amazingly effective and simple in some ways to just put diesel in a tank and be able to go out and work. And in our case, it means maintaining 4 workhorses and their equipment and putting energy into growing the feed for those animals also. So we have a kind of a unique product in our vegetables that their energy input imprint is also smaller.
This is a wonderful start. What we'd like to do, though, if we can, is try and give you a call back on another line. Sorry to interrupt again, but we'd like to try another line.
A little cleaner line. I think people are going to have a hard time hearing with the amount of static, so we're going to see if it's on our line. And we're just going to talk about fall planting while we hang up with you, and I'll just recall in a second. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay, we'll call you right back. So as far as fall planting goes, let's talk about that for a moment, folks. We're just going to switch gears while we try another line here. We can pick up our guests, hopefully on a clearer line. What's happening now in the garden is obviously people are cutting things back, and the summer garden is waning for sure. And coming up in the next couple of weeks, you want to think about getting in garlic. Is a great crop to get in, your fava beans. If you can find starts, you can still get in some kale and squash. I mean, kale and chard.
So
and all your winter greens, you can still seed arugula and mizunas and a lot of the winter greens. And so now is a good time to get some of that fall cropping in. And looks like we're going to try and get back to our guests. This is Stephen and Gloria Decatur. Are you there?
I'm here.
Yes.
Okay. That sounds better.
That's so much better.
No static in that line, it sounds like. Great.
Well, I'm hoping that everyone was able to hear all that you were telling us about the way you've developed the farm out there at Live Power Community Farm in Covelo, and that you've been there for 32 years, and you're farming primarily vegetables. It's a 40-acre organism of farm base, land base, and you've got 4 acres in vegetables, sounds like some pasture for some animals, some cows and sheep, and you're working with draft horses to plow your gardens. You were talking about this, just at work trying to develop at the farm and with a solar energy energy base. And so you're talking about animals, and it sounds like you're also trying to produce your fertility, your own fertility. So when you talk about an organism, it's like a limiting the inputs that you bring in and trying to be able to meet all of your needs to produce food from this 40-acre land base.
Yeah, and before Stephen talks about that a minute, just also that we're trying to do grains for ourselves and for the animals.
Uh-huh. Okay, good. That's one of the ones that makes it so challenging to eat locally. That's one of our real gaps,
yeah,
is the grains. So that's wonderful.
And the other challenging part about that is getting the processing equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right.
To deal with it.
Yeah.
Well.
Then we're working with photovoltaic also, because, of course, we need power to pump water,
mm-hmm.
and shop tools and electricity. So. We have we're putting up another 5 kilowatts, so we'll have an 18-kilowatt system in place hopefully by next year. And the 13 kilowatts was doing about 2/3 of our energy. So we're going to come pretty close, I think.
To providing all of our energy use for the farm and mm-hmm. for ourselves personally.
That's mm-hmm. great. I'm really surprised that you can you can have 150 member CSA with 4 acres. That seems like an incredible amount of production.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that much about acreage but it just seems like you must have incredible fertility and growth, or I don't know. It just seems like, wow, that's a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's part of the area is in intensive mm-hmm. beds, as it were, except that we do the tillage with horses. And then some of the larger crops like corn and potatoes and broccoli, things that take more space, we do as row crops.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, you can produce a lot of food on a smaller acreage if it's kept well
right.
fertilized.
Right.
But then we also, the pathways between the beds are fairly narrow,
mm-hmm.
so you can get more in the space.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's good for California, because water is an issue, and the cost of pumping water, and things want to be as concise as possible.
Right.
And also, just in terms of compost being a very precious substance coming from our own farm and the energy we put in to make it, we want to focus that as concisely as possible also.
Right, right. I know we're going to move into talking about the kind of, I think I would call it farm economy, or looking at economy being more than just money. But I was just wondering if you really feel like at this point you've created what you would consider sustainable, like both for yourselves and your own survival and for the land. If you feel like you've gotten to a place where you can say, yeah, what we have created feels like a sustainable model.
That's a big question. In terms of just that, I think in general that's true, but I mean, we're still developing even mm-hmm. after 30 years, bringing it to a maintenance level, wouldn't you say, Stephen?
Yeah, it's an ongoing process. You can have an ideal, and to achieve it takes years and years of work. And also, it It takes people. It takes people with skills and commitment to carry out that work.
Right.
And that's almost one of the biggest difficulties, is, you know, finding people with the skill base and then having that be sustainable.
Right. And what is your, how do you how are people work there? I know you guys do, you have an apprenticeship program?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. So we open the farm to people that want to come and get practical hands-on experience in this sort of small, diversified farm.
Mm-hmm.
And for a year, for, you know, generally a full season, March through November. And we also have a couple of positions in the farm, one as a field work, horse work person that spends, you know, more of their time doing horse work.
Mm-hmm.
And also we are looking and have had in the past a garden manager to help track the vegetable growing, because we're still doing a lot of building and infrastructure work also.
Mm-hmm.
And when I try to cover all three of those bases, I get stretched pretty thin and
right.
Progress is really slow.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you look back on 30 years and say, wow, what have we done? But there's a lot done.
Yeah. Some of it's probably not as visible until you stick your hand in the soil or
right.
Yeah.
Have seen where it started.
Yeah. But this farm is really possible because of community input, you know, on the part of the people that come to work and be in the farm and help manifest it each year, and also on the part of the members who receive the food.
Mm-hmm.
And the other aspect is just that ideally, hopefully, we're growing farmers, so the people who come and learn, then they go off and set up farms or work along with other farms in other areas, and so there's a you know, pretty incredible product that goes out into the world.
Right. I know we interviewed Jennifer Green, and she was there with you for a year. And she was really...
she worked with us for 2 years.
Oh, that was really inspiring to talk to her about doing the grain and beans CSA that she's doing. That was...
Yeah, we have probably 25 members in the Bay Area who get her grain share.
Oh, that's great.
So I'm curious that you seems like there was an evolutionary process for you from a subsistence farm to going to the farmers market and then becoming a community supported agricultural CSA farm. So you have members of your CSA. Let's talk about that a little bit. What maybe why you decided to go that route and how it's developed for you.
Well, we heard about the whole idea of CSA, and one of our some of our friends on the East Coast,
mm-hmm.
Were one of they had started one of the first CSAs in the country on the East Coast, and it sounded pretty exciting to us, and it seemed to fit right into what we were doing and what we needed to do, and so we checked it out and got it started, and there was an incredible response. And for the first time since we had been farming, we started to have a steady income. And the whole farm started to feel a little more stable.
Mm-hmm. And we also had the energy and support of a group of people that were in direct relationship to us as their farmers and to this land as their farm.
Mm-hmm.
And when we then... down the line had to face other issues, like we were here as caretakers on the land originally for about 20 years, and we had to face the issue of securing the land into the future for our farming operation, but then also we wanted to make it a permanent farm. Because we were in direct relationship with the people getting our food, and we had people that came forward to help us with that process and help kind of cradle and carry the farm. And keep it viable, mm-hmm. Because through their direct relationship. So this business form is a different business form than sort of traditional private enterprise. We're really a community-based organization of growers and eaters of the farm, active farmers and the supporting farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And our goal is to take care of the land together and produce that food, and all of that food is then distributed in the community. We don't market outside of the farm at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this is a parallel system going on beside the market system, with money coming in to support the operation of the farm, food going out, but not going through the market system at all.
Right, that's an interesting, because I know that a lot of people have kind of morphed the CSA model to kind of more what people call subscription farming, or and then where they give some to the members and then they also sell to the market.
Right.
And that feels like it's a kind of a different take than what you're talking about, which is really a unit where everything is kind of interconnected and it stays within. It doesn't, you don't sell the extra elsewhere, but everyone who is a member benefits from those good harvests. And also takes the brunt when you have a failed harvest.
That's right, which, you know, doesn't generally happen, although the weather is getting more chaotic and it's mm-hmm. getting more difficult, and so it you know, could be happening.
Mm-hmm.
But the original concept with CSA is that not that people are buying food so much as that they are supporting the operation of a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's, you know, carried out, and you're trying to meet the needs of all the players, you're trying to meet the needs of the grower, the farmer, and the eaters, and the land itself. And so you're working from an operating budget that has the expenses, and then the members receiving the food are splitting that expense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a... is covers more of the real costs of producing food. Those are the real costs of producing food sustainably, is that the environment is taken care of and that you're not polluting the earth, and now we have to be concerned about polluting the air and carbon emissions. And so that's where becoming more energy conscious in the farm is really a very important step. And so people are not so much buying food as helping ensure that a farm can be viable, and that it will be able to continue to operate in the future. And when you're in working through the market for your support, there's no guarantees. You know, you don't know. You can do the work and produce the crop, and if many other farmers grew the same thing and you have reduced price or you can't get it marketed, well, then you simply, your expenses just go uncovered, and so you're put under can be under considerable economic duress because of that economic system.
This is our 19th year as a CSA, and we have quite a few families who have been with us during all those 19 years.
Wow.
And we have, their children have been raised during that time, and we have that relationship with those families as a whole, and those children come back and, you know, express their gratitude and how it's impacted their lives.
And you also bring school kids in, you were saying. So there's a lot of community, there's work weekends that happen a couple times a year so that people have access periodically to come to the farm and help out, or, you know, see the farm, meet you and see the farm and develop, not just so you're not just an abstract in their minds.
Yeah, it's one of our members, the whole family, was just here this last weekend for the Biodynamic meeting, and we were making the preparations, and as they were leaving, this is their third year as members, and they said how they have two small children, and they said how every Saturday morning they get their vegetables, and they sit together as a family, and they take the food out of the basket and they put it away, and then they sit there and they read the newsletter together, and it creates this wonderful experience for them, where making the farm really alive to them, and they, you know, can sense, oh, wow, this is what happened to the animals, and you know, and then it frosted or it almost frosted, and so it brings them a much greater connection to the food, the land, and the people where their food is coming from.
Right.
You've also have sort of created a network with other farmers to help supply families with all of their food, or a lot of their food needs. So for example, the Jennifer Green of the Grain CSA is delivering grains, and you have other people that you've connected with for stone fruits from Cape Hay Valley, and eggs and chickens with Adam Gaska. Is that?
Yeah. So our members in the Bay Area have an opportunity, it's their choice, beyond getting the vegetable share, of getting a grain share, a flower, like a flower bouquet share, fruit share, Strauss dairy share with butter and yogurt, and eggs from Adam Gaska, and also chickens he did this year. And then we're working with Filigreen Farm in Boonville, hoping to establish a fruit share for Mendocino County members, and then would also like to look into the possibility of a grain share for Mendocino County members, and egg shares, and whatever we can pull together.
Yeah, that is so wonderful.
That seems like another really good model, because it's hard for one farm to supply all of those. That's just like a lot of little things to keep track of.
Very difficult for one farm to do all of it. We always dreamed we would be able to do the fruit, but it's going to be another 30 years at the rate we can do it here.
And we used to do the eggs, but, you know, then we decided that it was one thing that we could pass by and let Adam do it.
But
we've done it in a way that retains a direct relationship between our members and the different farmers.
Right.
So we invited the farmers to come. We have an annual general meeting in the Bay Area that all members are invited to, and we invited the other farmers that would be offering a different share to come and explain to the members what they could provide and what their budget would be for doing that, and then left it to the members to decide if they wanted to take up an additional share.
Mm-hmm.
And then the members get, invitations to the farm days on those farms, and also newsletters. So sometimes our newsletter is a combined newsletter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
and you distribute the food through the same network, basically.
In the Bay Area, the members actually meet and break down we send the boxes down in bulk boxes of carrots or lettuce, whatever is in the harvest, and they nominate a member from each neighborhood group of about four or five families, each cluster group, and one of those families would go in on a given Saturday morning and lay out the 80 baskets and divide up the food, and then on their way home deliver the basket, the other four or five baskets that belong in their neighborhood group.
Mm-hmm.
So including all the fruit and the flowers and the grain and the butter.
Right, so it all comes to the same place, and then it's distributed.
Yeah,
it goes to one place, and then they take it out from there. So they're actually performing the distribution work of the farm, and that's voluntary.
Right.
I'm
curious for you to describe a little the budgetary process, because it sounds like you have these annual meetings and you actually present the budget. And is there a discussion do the members have input into it, or they pretty much just accept this is what you need?
How we have done that in the past. We haven't done it as much recently, but there are some CSAs on the East Coast who definitely do that. They mm-hmm. have the, they have all of the members in the same room, and they go over the budget and say, this is what we need. And then they actually solicit members to say, okay, we're going to give this much. And so they don't actually have a price that mm-hmm. is set up.
They just bid say,
they bid on it. And so, and then they keep bidding on it until they reach the total amount of the budget. And so some families pay a lot more, some pay a lot less, and it doesn't necessarily reflect the number of people in the family. So there might be one couple that has more resources and they pay more, and then there might be a family that's, you know, with six kids and they pay considerably less.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm, interesting.
And whether to, you know, set up that approach or whatever approach we take, that's a mutual decision between us as the farmers and our core group people.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, as I say, a different business model than a, you know, traditional private enterprise. It's really the members and the core group people out of the membership that want to be involved with meetings and making decisions about the farm business. We meet with those people, and then, you know, there's communication with the rest of the membership.
Mm-hmm.
And, can you
and they perform many really important offices to the farm. We're getting a website up, we hope, in about a month, and we've been working on it for about a year and a half. And our members in the Bay Area have done tremendous work in, organizing that. And each year they set up the organization for the distribution. And when we approached securing the land, we had a whole group of people that worked with us there. So this is where the community, people eating the food, are as important to the viability and the long-term sustainability of the farm
mm-hmm.
as the farmers are, mm-hmm. really.
And we're working on developing a stronger core group within Mendocino County. And sometimes your earlier question, Sarah, about the budget and presenting the budget, since we have members in the Bay Area and in Willits and in Ukiah and in Covelo, it's a little challenging at times to, you know, think of the whole budget, you know, with all of those different communities and addressing the whole budget in just speaking to one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas some CSAs, they're just one community.
Mm-hmm. And I can't remember what you said in the beginning. Do people, is it a year-round CSA, or do you have a period of time in the winter where you don't deliver?
We have 30 weeks of harvest from mm-hmm. the beginning of May until Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
And so then we have 5 months. But in the Bay Area, members have a choice of then getting vegetables and fruit from Good Humus in the Cafe Valley.
Uh-huh.
And then they can continue that for a year round.
Mm-hmm. Because they have a climate that they can grow greens and things in the winter fairly well. I think here in this locale, we would have to use greenhouses and, you know, cloches, coal frames,
mm-hmm.
kind of climate moderating, and then you'd also have to plant a lot of crops that could be storage crops through mm-hmm. the winter, potatoes and roots and carrots and beets and things like that that you could carry through. So I think that it could work in concert if you had one farmer that was going to take on that winter period and was set up for it and had the facilities,
right?
You know, and then that would give the summer farmer a breather.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about taking it all on.
Yeah.
You know, it's important to have a little bit of a break.
Yeah, that seems really important for the sustainability of the farm and for the people.
Yeah, but it could certainly happen.
Yeah, you were. We discussed a little bit about the energetics of. You know, farming is so labor-intensive and takes a lot of life force energy to keep it going. And I just think there's a couple of really important things that you've developed on your farm as far as, one, it sounds like the CSA and having sort of a more secure financial base of feeling supported anyway in your farming practice that help relieve some lost energy there, as well as securing your land through the Agricultural Land Trust, which we hope to be able to talk about in more detail in another show. But and then also this seasonality to for the farmer's life. This seems all very key components to creating a sustainable life for farmers and farming.
It's really, you know, having those 5 months that we aren't harvesting is really an in-breathing and an out-breathing. Mm-hmm. And there's a real healing there, you know, and you have a chance to take a breath and recoup and come back energized.
Mm-hmm. Right, 'cause when we're on here for farming, it's so on. It's
yeah. And it also gives us an opportunity to, you know, work on infrastructure and do buildings and, you know, paperwork and a lot of other things that we cannot, you know, even begin to think about
right.
during the summer
right.
or the spring when we're pushing so hard.
Well, do you feel like this is a model for other farmers to take up? Do you feel like you've created something that's just kind of a quirky thing that a few people can do? Or do you, when you're looking at, like, I know you've been part of kind of the larger discussions we've had some around creating a sustainable food system in Mendocino County. Do you feel like the CSA model and your really what you've created there is a way to go to create both health, more farms and healthier farms that are really sustaining both the people and the land?
I feel that it's a critical approach to take because I have to look at the market system and say, well, why don't we have local sustainable farms?
Mm-hmm.
Largely we don't. And the food that is brought into the county is, you know, coming from a long ways away. And when the sustainable farming that we need to create can't be done just by the farmers themselves, no matter what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we need a different market, a different system, a different economic system that doesn't just leave it up to chance, because right now it is totally up to chance. And
mm-hmm.
as we get more corporate organic and an economic market system that is sort of governed and directed by this bottom line, mechanistic kind of bottom line that doesn't have people and their needs at its center, then that makes local farming even more difficult. So I think that in order to create a really sustainable agriculture into the future, we're going to have to create a different economic system that recognizes, puts the human and the earth at the center of the system, rather than making you know, profit for investors or even capitalism in that form hasn't supported farming,
mm-hmm.
viable, sustainable farming in the long run. And communism is also does not have the community at the center, people at the center. It often ends up with the government at the center.
Mm-hmm.
And so we need a different economic system. And there is movement towards that nowadays in the local Business Alliance for Local Living Economies and many other aspects of change in economic life, but the system that we're working with here could be called an associative economic system, where all of the players are meeting together and then they're determining what the parameters of that economic system are and how it's going to work
mm-hmm.
through, you know, mutual exchange. And so this is a way that we can bring whereas the market economic system is sort of makes a break between the eater and the grower, you know, and the eater is trying to cover their needs, what they perceive as their needs, get a good deal, but then the grower is trying to, you know, get enough to work, and it appears to be in conflict because you're not recognizing that you're actually part of the same, you have the same goals overall of a healthy agriculture and a healthy environment and healthy food.
Right.
And so if you come together in consciousness, then you can use the money to support people and in a more conscious way that brings those human values back into the picture,
mm-hmm.
life values.
I get really excited at the thought of more and more community farms around the county supported by various groups of people, and how we can, since we have such different climates within the county, and how we can, with those different farms, start providing all the different needs that we have, and then doing various trades as we are doing with these farms coming to the Bay Area.
Right.
You know, like on the coast, we can do more, you know, greens and brassicas and things like that, and then they can't do so much of the hot summer crops, but just, you know, developing that over the season and over the year and seeing what kind of system we can develop.
Right.
Where we can, you know, support each other.
One of the questions I have when you're talking about the whole mutual relationship, and I think a lot about when I talk about food and local food and supporting smaller farms, and people often say, well, it's not really, it doesn't work in my own economy. Like, I can't afford local organic food. I hear people say that all the time, and I just, and, you know, I question that very deeply, but I wonder what your response is. Do you feel like what you're providing is affordable to most people? Is it something that's kind of a, you know, that only the upper class can really afford to be a member, or do you feel like, I mean, how would you address that question of, like?
Well, I feel that not everyone, but a certain number of people are not paying attention every time that they go to the store and seeing how much money they actually spend.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if more people did that, whether they're buying organic or not organic, and they saw what was in their grocery bags and then laid that out over, you know, a month, and then kept track of that, that they would see that they're actually spending a lot more than they think. And, you know, we've calculated our baskets throughout the season, and generally speaking, we find that it's less than what someone would pay out, you know, just going to the store,
mm-hmm.
You know, breaking it down over the whole season.
Right.
It's a more efficient system in that the money that people do spend goes directly to the farm. Mm-hmm. And the food that's produced on the farm, you know, there's always 20% or something that's not cosmetic, but it's perfectly good, nutritious food. And so in the market system, that doesn't get utilized. And then there are all these, you know, expenses. I mean, even going in to a farmer's market, you have to spend quite a bit of time, and it may not all sell, and you may have to go to many markets in order to have enough market share to be viable as a farm. So if your purpose is to operate a farm and produce food for people in the long term, then we need to make that interchange as efficient as possible, you know, for the farmer and for the eater.
We have members who have been with us for 19 years, and they found that over the years, as they, because there is a learning curve in mm-hmm. Participating in a community-supported farm and eating through the seasons, and they found that they save money in terms of not going to the store as much, and also the type of food that they eat. By, you know, there's often the question, oh, well, I don't know what this is, and I don't know what this is, but then as you learn what that is, and then you start eating out of the basket, you just change your way of eating. And, you know, generally, you know, the comments that we've heard over the years is that people feel a lot better, they feel a lot healthier, they find they're not eating some things that maybe is not so good for them, and they're not buying those things because they're not in the store to get them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I keep thinking about the all the hidden costs
right.
of whether it's health, you know, health care, or cleaning up from pesticide or the residues of not well cared for land, then that's cost us a lot of money, and down the road, and health, in our health as well. So,
yeah, and I think, you know, that same money, if it would be directed consciously into local farms, I mean, there's like 80,000 people in Mendocino County, I think, something like that. And if you even 10% of those people, 8,000, and maybe it takes 80 families to create an economic base for a farm, what's that, like 100 farms,
mm-hmm.
you know, that could be viable if people would, you know, go into direct relationship to, and as I say, with the CSA, the members can form what that organization does,
mm-hmm.
Because they're part of that organization, they can help make decisions. So in terms of meeting low-income needs for people, some CSAs have operated on a sliding share, for instance, sliding scale. Some have raised funds to support some low-income shares. So I think there are ways that through the community that, you know, you could address some of those issues.
Right. Another thing I have when I think about kind of your model versus, and then think about, well, 100 farms, how would we get 100 people farming, or 100 farms started and going? Or I know there's many already. There probably is 100 farms that are could go in this model. But I feel like one of the things we're fighting in this economy of Mendocino County is that there's much more lucrative cash crops. People either will put in grapes or other crop that make it so much easier to make your payments. And I feel like with that as our secondary kind of farming model, or other the hidden farming model, that it's really hard to get people thinking and wanting to grow food. And I'm wondering if you've seen that over the years, because I feel like it both makes the land prices really high because of the grapes and the whole wine industry, that so that farm land is expensive, but
yeah,
also just growing food when you could grow something that you'll get a lot more money per pound.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it hard to convince people that growing food is an important part of the system, even though everyone knows we need to eat.
Right. Well, you know, we have to inspire young people to do that. And, I mean, we meet a lot of young people who are coming to this farm to learn about agriculture and would love to farm. But then they hit those two issues. Where is the land? How can I access land? And then also, how am I going to, you know, have a reasonable compensation that I can really make this a long-term life?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, it's okay to work hard and, you know, you're exercising your creative energy if you're appreciated and compensated that you can meet the needs in your life.
Right.
But if you work that hard and there's just always sort of a survival level of support coming back to you through the market or something, then, young people don't grow up and want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
We're hoping that, you know, as more people understand what needs to be done in terms of taking that huge speculative equity out of land and bringing it to a level that can be afforded out of farming income, that you know, there will be access to land for people, because there are definitely a lot of people who would love to farm. And I think if they could connect with a group of supportive eaters that would, you know, achieve that goal of a viable farm, that it definitely could happen.
And the educational program that we do with all the school classes that come to the farm, it's definitely an opportunity for people, young people, to experience what farm life is like. And definitely they experience it that it's a lot of work, but they also take a lot of joy out of it. And we just had a group of ninth graders here last week for 4 days, and they, you know, they worked really hard, and they also had a wonderful time. And so it's an inspiration to them and gives them the opportunity to think about some other things.
And they, you know, they recognize then that what we have in terms of food and life and plants and animals, we didn't make any of that. It's a gift. Mm-hmm. And they recognize that gift when they can see it, you know, expressed coming from the earth directly. And so it, besides good food for people, community-based farms can create that opportunity for people to come back in and interact with the earth and you know, experience that gift. And you can't love and take care of something if you don't even know who it is, or you don't have a you know, a connected relationship there. And so that's why it's just really critical to create that opportunity in the farm as much as we can.
Stephen, could you talk about, we have down to probably our last 4 minutes here, and just I'd like to give some resources for further study or inquiry into some of these community-based farming and economy ideas that you've been talking about with us today.
Mm-hmm. One is the a newsletter. It's a quarterly newsletter, and it's called The Community Farm. And it has a website, www.csafarms.org/csaresources.asp.
Okay.
The publication is The Community Farm.
Okay.
Quarterly. And it talks about many of these issues that we've been talking about. And then as a book that talks about the economic aspects and also land and all the other various aspects of and the history of community-supported agriculture, really a member's Bible, I would say, Farms of Tomorrow Revisited by Trager Groh, G-R-O-H, and Stephen McFadden. And that book is available from the Biodynamic Association at www.biodynamics.com.
Great, that's.
And then Gary Lamb at the Center for Social and Environmental Responsibility is doing a lot of education about associative economy. And the concepts for some of the base concepts for associative economy have come from Rudolf Steiner's work, among other people. But he's working with in that area of education quite a bit. And his contact is Gary Lamb at usadatanet.net. I believe that's the email.
Okay, wonderful. Thank
you. So, you know, a little bit of we need a kind of a farm midwifing organization, school or something for community members that want to go in this direction and really focus their support to create viable farming
right.
in the county.
Yeah.
To come together, learn about what are some of the roles the core group can take, and you know, how can we raise the money to decommoditize land, and how can we approach all of these issues?
And we have room for more members in Mendocino County.
I was wondering that.
Kaya, Povolo, and we only have 8 more weeks of the season, but we do go until Thanksgiving, and then we start up again in May.
So if people were interested in that, how is the best way to contact?
They can email us at, let's see, livepower@igc.org or call us at 707-983-8196. And hopefully soon the website will be up, and that's livepower.org.
Great.
Wonderful. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been such a pleasure talking with you, and you just have so much experience and thought put into what it takes to live on the land and create, feed us. So we really appreciate all that you've done and do.
We thank you so much for inviting us. It was really an honor to be on your show.
And we'll do it again soon, and we'll talk about those agricultural land trusts.
Great. Oh, cool. Okay. Thank you so much, Linda.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Farm and Garden Show with Linda and Sarah. We come the first Monday of every month, and the preceding portion of The Farm and Garden Show has been brought to you by Dirt Cheap Landscape and Garden Supply, located on Highway 1 south of Fort Bragg.
I wanted to add in the little weather report, because I know that everyone who listens probably to our show is a little bit interested in the weather if you're a farmer or a gardener, and that it is looking like rain is coming. There is a chance of rain showers today, and tomorrow showers are likely. And so we are having maybe our first rains of the year, which means that kind of all is changing, and people should think about what they may need to pull in. If you're doing any seed saving, usually it's a good time to start thinking about that. But I wanted to make sure people are aware of that weather change.
All right. And tune in. We'll be around for the pledge drive. And coming up in a few weeks, this is... You're tuned in to KZYX 90.7 FM Philo, KZYZ 91.5 FM Willits and Ukiah, and 88.1 FM Fort Bragg. Stay tuned for Steve Rubin and Stolen Moments just after Jim Hightower.
George W. called it a great example, declaring that our country should take some lessons from it. The it that has so enamored George is the privatized Social Security system that was imposed on the people of Chile 25 years ago by the dictatorship of Augusto Pinochet. His system of having workers pay into personal pension accounts managed by private investment banks is called the Chilean model, and it has long been hailed by laissez-faire think tanks and by the Bushites as a model for privatizing our own nation's Social Security program. Before we swallow this pill of privatization, however, we might want to ask the people of Chile how they have fared under its marketplace magic. Not well. Chilean workers who participate have 10% of their paychecks deducted and put into the hands of the private pension bankers. Yet half of the Chilean people cannot afford this deduction, so they end up with no old age pension whatsoever. Of those who do participate, the rules are so rigged that 40% cannot accumulate enough money in the system to have a livable retirement. As a top official of the Economic Commission for Latin America bluntly puts it, the bottom line is that this system does not work. Well, it might not work for the people, but it's working very nicely for the bankers. The six funds now running the privatized system are enjoying an average annual profit of 50%. The reason for such astonishing profits is, of course, the same reason that U.S. banks are riding high: exorbitant fees. The World Bank finds that Chilean pension managers are ripping off between a fourth and a third of the workers' payments in the